Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 2nd of June, recording at 8:22 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, I'd like to make a hearty welcome to all the new subscribers who have joined recently and mention that I always start these weekly reviews, I beg your pardon, these long-term audios with a quick review of what's just happened during the preceding week. So, as far as stock markets are concerned, we saw them begin to recover some of their nerve following the heavy selling pressure that we had seen earlier. And in terms of government bonds, they had slumped back, but some of them were starting to firm yesterday, and they had a pretty good day in here today. The U.S. dollar continues to range, but this is a weekday really influenced by some softish economic data. And precious metals, they got a second hit on the downside. This is part of the cascade effect that I had talked about that would be led by stock markets. A sharp sell-off in stock markets would rein in all the runaway uptrends. Industrial metals had been similarly affected, but have been picking up recently for the most part. Now, precious metals rallied today, but some of the industrial metals had particularly strong gains. I think nickel and zinc were among the leaders there, and copper didn't have a bad day either. And in the energy sector, well, oil's been very much range-bound, but finding support around that $69-$70 level for the NYMEX crude, and it's steady in here today, $72-$76 as I speak. And natural gas, having probed the depths, had a small upside key day reversal on Wednesday, and had very modest follow-through yesterday, retraced most of the earlier gains, but had a firm day in here today. So that does look like to be steadying appropriately at the onset of the official hurricane season, although obviously the dangerous period of maximum danger is still several weeks away. And soft commodities, some of those have been picking up. The livestock sector, meats at any rate, have been doing quite well. Well, that would be livestock. They would be livestock, wouldn't they? Have been doing quite well. And we also had seen, again, cotton's been firm. Soybeans had a surge in here today. That looks interesting as well. Okay, now let's get back to the bigger, longer-term themes. Now, you probably are very aware of my view. I maintain that we're in a medium-term correction here for global stock markets. But they fell very sharply, became short-term technically quite oversold, and some steadying is taking place. And I've been kind of monitoring the response, particularly the market response, to a recent injection of liquidity by the Bank of Japan. Now, remember, Japan announcing that it was moving away from its accommodative monetary policy. This was some months ago, and that interest rates would start to edge upwards this year, but mainly that it was draining some of the vast quantities of liquidity that it had pumped into the global system in recent years. Now, that was an important factor leading to some reduction in the super accommodative monetary conditions that we had seen around the globe, which for such a long time was the rising tide that lifted all boats. Well, as some of that liquidity began to drain away, suspect investments in my book, at any rate, for this particular environment characterized by a gradual buildup of very gradual buildup of inflationary pressures. Government bonds, they were the first to weaken. Stock markets continued to race ahead. We saw some softening in property prices in a number of countries where they had been particularly strong, and they softened against the background of rising short-term interest rates and also some upward pressure more recently, as I've mentioned, in the longer term interest rates. But the last to fall, and it has been a sharp fall, were the stock markets and some of those runaway resources that had been so strong. Well, clearly the Bank of Japan, fearful of repeating some of its mistakes in the earlier decades, decided that maybe it needed to push a little bit more of that liquidity back into the system. And today, for instance, we had some good tails on the candlestick charts, meaning that Japan started weak and then closed near the highs of the day. And I think we had an upside Kiide reversal for the Nikkei stock index. And it's also bottom of the range territory for Japan. Against that background, incidentally, and this is something I certainly didn't think I was going to do until I came in and looked at that upside Kiide reversal, but just a few minutes ago I decided to open a long position in the Nikkei futures. I placed a tight stop, and that's just a short-term trade, so I've sort of hedged my one remaining hedge in here, which is a short in the U.S. Dow Jones Industrial Average. Remember, I took the profits on my other and earlier hedge shorts against my long-term investment portfolio. So, and I bought that Nikkei despite having said that with an operation coming up on the 26th that I didn't really want to be opening that many positions and had resisted the temptation to pick up some more precious metals on that sell-off that we saw yesterday. I couldn't resist doing a little bit in here today, and I have one other trade which I'll mention, but let me get back to the big theme here. I think we are in the right-hand extension phase of this type 2 top within a medium-term correction. I'm not looking for anything worse than that. I'm not looking for a bear market, although it's not at all unlikely that some markets could fall enough to statistically cause people to claim that it was a bear market. In other words, you get over 20% on declines, and people tend to start to scream bear market in increasing numbers. The way I see it, we had 39 great months on the upside. We were due for a medium-term correction. Interest rates were rising. That's never the best time for investments when you get persistent rises in short-term and then also with long-term interest rates rising. Cyclical factors, you know all about that, the U.S. election cycle. Seasonal factors, I've mentioned that so many times. And we were, say, overdue, ripe for a medium-term correction, and volatility had all but disappeared prior to the recent sell-off. So all these things pointing to the correction which I had been forecasting for 2Q and 3Q of 2006. The type of top characteristic, the sharp downward move, which markets fall further and faster than people have seen during the previous rise. That's what we have seen for most stock market indices and when those declines commenced last month. Of course, some of about the only bubbles, real bubbles, in the stock market cycle, markets such as Saudi Arabia, they peaked back in January. But the majority of the indices, as I say, peaking developed country indices peaking last month. Now getting the sort of gradual technical rally, right-hand extension phase. I don't think we'll see new highs, and if we were to see many new highs, I would feel I was wrong in my hypothesis about a further correction. But I think the odds still favor an additional correction, but not before we get some additional right-hand extension here. And I do feel that an additional correction would create an excellent buying opportunity. And I do expect the correction to be over by the end of October at the latest, and that we should have a fairly good run really for quite some time. I do expect some economic slowdown in line with a bit of the liquidity contraction that we have seen, in line with the interest rate increases, and in line with a more cautious mood generally following some stock market corrections. And of course, having talked about liquidity contraction, when you get a number of high-flying markets suddenly going into reverse, that provides its own tightening of monetary conditions, and it also slows the velocity with which money changes hands. So that's the overall background that I see, but I want to emphasize I'm not looking for more than a medium-term correction, and that's why I didn't sell any of my long-term core investment positions. Instead, I put on asymmetrical hedge shorts, which I've traded fairly actively as I usually do. And now with the addition today of the Nikkei, I don't have any hedges on, so I'm hoping that these ranging rallies will move a little bit higher and affording me an opportunity to let out a few more hedge shorts. But more there'll be I'll obviously be mentioning these possibilities on pretty much a daily basis. Okay, what about primary sectors in terms of the markets that I like most? I maintain that the resources theme will remain one of the outstanding ones for a very, very long time. Now, the mentality within the financial community is to think of this as being a highly cyclical sector, which it was for so many years, and it was a very depressed cyclical sector overall, Rust Belt industries and all that. Well, when you get a sector moving back into a secular bull market for economic reasons, and that would be the supply and elasticity versus rising demand, with the rising demand being the most important factor in that bullish phase, particularly for industrial resources. And when you get these long cycles, they last for many, many years. For instance, consider the whole NASDAQ tech and telecoms boom that ran for over a decade. At least commodity cycles are much, much longer generally, and I think this will be one of the strongest commodity cycles of all time. So yes, prices pushed up to sort of mini bubble levels and have seen a shakeout, and I've predicted that all along, that we will get periodic and quite sharp reactions, and we will get some lengthy consolidations following temporary bubble peaks, but all within this long-term secular bull market. And along these lines, I have read earlier in the day Donald Cox's latest Basic Points, wonderfully informative and wonderfully entertaining, but I commend to you particularly his section on mining and mining shares. Excuse me. Muffled a sneeze there. So again, read that Donald Cox report if you're inclined. It's good value. Now, in addition to the mines, I do like the emerging market sector. That's high beta. So when we get a stock market fright, such as we saw commencing last month, those are the markets that come down the most. But they'll also bounce back up and recover quickly. So there's been a whole lot of talk about India, descriptions of bubbles. Well, at its recent peak. The Sensex index really was not unfavorably. Let me restate that. At its recent peak, the Sensex was not on unfavorable valuations relative to the Dow and the Nasdaq. And people have been trumpeting the. Did I say the Nasdaq? It's much more attractive than that. The Sensex has been on not unfavorable valuations relative to the Dow and the S&P, meaning that they were similarly valued, the Dow and the S&P with slightly higher yield, but nowhere near the same growth potential as you have with those Sensex company components. So talk of a bubble is absurd. And I reckon that India is, well, it's my favorite stock market for the very long term, and I would be delighted to add to my investment position there, and fully intend to. I'm hoping that I get a little bit better buying opportunity, but that's be one of my top purchases. But I like emerging markets generally. The resources-based emerging markets are attractive. Governance rather is always an important consideration with emerging markets. It's a key a key variable. So that would stay my hand in terms of many of the Central or South American stock markets. That doesn't mean that they won't perform, but governance is one of the filters that I will use to net them out. So my resources plays in Central or South America would be, well, Brazil, far and away at the top of the list, and Mexico, another alternative, but not now, not in this environment. I want to see more of a correction. Canada, Australia, outstanding plays, but again, I would want to see more of a correction in here. So resources, emerging markets generally, I'll overweight in terms of Asia, and among developing Asia, very much at the top of my list, Japan and South Korea. They're pretty much co-favorites, but I'm not buying these now, other than a speculative trade that I just mentioned in the Nikkei in Japan, because it's temporarily oversold. I expect my main buying, if I'm right on this additional medium-term correction for stock markets, to occur really in the autumn months, say October, probably not before September, but October and November. Okay, moving on to government bonds. I don't like that sector. The main reason is that there's too much supply, and also interest rates have been at historically exceptionally low levels. I don't buy the deflationary argument. I take Ben Bernanke at his word when he says it won't happen here, as he did several years ago when he was a Fed governor. We have seen the color of their money. They print and inflate, and I think we'll continue to do so more often than not. That doesn't mean that they won't attempt to rein in inflation from time to time, as they've been doing recently. But when stock markets weaken, when property markets weaken, they will come. When economies weaken, they will come back in and pump them back up again, I would wager. So I think that the worst long-term investments that we could have would be long-dated government bonds, and I will not be buying any of those. I will short rallies. I wouldn't be shorting in here right now. I think they will get a little bit further rally as and when stock markets next turn down. Now, in terms of currencies, I do think that the dollar is on its way back down to test its historic lows. You can see those. Go look at the dollar index, for instance. Well, any of the currency charts, and click on the 20-year charts. I think the dollar against its index, which is 57% euros, will move back down to the 80-78 region. So it's got a way to go yet. I don't expect a collapse of the dollar. I've never expected a collapse of the dollar. And I mentioned yesterday, I believe, that the Henry Paulson appointment is an important one and just shows that while the US would like to have a gradual devaluation, they certainly don't want a rout, which would be in no one's interests. And bear in mind that no country in this environment wants a strong currency. It's just that some countries want a weaker currency more than others, and that's a movable feast. In other words, they'll see a period of currency weakness and then they'll be satisfied with that. Other countries will notice that their currency is appreciating and they won't be too worried about it until it persists for a while. And there's nothing like currency traders to run a trend. So that currency will get a little bit overextended or expensive in the eyes of its respective central bank, and then we'll get some aggressive efforts to weaken the currency. That's the type of environment that we live in, and that will persist for many, many years. So currency activity more often than not will be range bound, but within those ranges you can still get some sharp moves, and the dollar, as I say, is on its way back down to its the region of its historic lows, but no dollar collapse is in my script. Now, I do feel though that in terms of currencies, that gold, that really does represent hard money. Hard money ran too far ahead in the short term to be sustainable, so it's in a multi-month, medium-term consolidation phase. Here, gold has temporarily peaked against fiat money, the paper currencies. But I maintain that over the longer term, and I'm talking about the 10 to 20 years or so, that gold will outperform most, well, no, it'll outperform all other currencies, all the fiat currencies, I should say, gold and its proxies, such as silver, platinum, even palladium. And therefore, gold in one form or another is a core position in my portfolio. And silver provides terrific trading opportunities for those who are inclined because of its volatility. I've already mentioned the industrial resources. Again, to repeat myself, this is a classic supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme. We have never had demand for commodities at this level of strength and appear to be so sustainable for such a long time. Previously, the spikes in commodity prices occurred during periods of wars. And while wars lasted a long time for those who were caught up in them, they are generally of only a few years' duration. Whereas I think this immense period of economic revival and regeneration taking place for so many developing countries with such huge populations will mean that the demand for resources will not only remain strong, but it will grow even stronger and it will last forever and ever and ever. And when you get people who talk about their resources bubbles, I think they continue to think of this as being a highly cyclical industry. In other words, they're looking at the last 20 years and the last 25 years. And they also, I think, have overstated the extent to which production can be increased, or that substitutes can be provided to offset the tremendous demand. And I also feel that they are almost entirely China-centric. And you know, the one of the biggest arguments you always see in every bearish report on commodities is, well, China is not going to maintain this rate of demand. Well, perhaps not. Perhaps it will, perhaps it won't. But what about India? What about Vietnam? What about Indonesia? What about Brazil? What about Mexico? What about Russia? Now, all these countries What about the Middle East and all those developing regions? Take pretty well the whole developing world, building cities. These are popping up like mushrooms in September. So that demand, I think, is going to go on for a very, very long time. And when people say, well, we're going to see China and other countries move away from infrastructure development, well, perhaps China, but not for, I would argue, for at least another decade. And if they shift the economic emphasis to consumption, that's another argument given by the commodity bears. Well, let's talk about consumer products. If a large Chinese and Indian middle class, if they are encouraged to be voracious consumers, what are they going to be buying? Well, they've gone from the bicycles to the motorbikes to the automobiles and the refrigerators and the air conditioners and the washing machines and the dishwashers and so on and all the other things that so many people in the West have taken for granted for so long. So again, this is a hugely bullish theme. And then there's also energy, which will remain a very, very bullish theme in all its facets, from conventional to renewable energy to some of the interesting projects that are coming up involving clean coal, involving ethanol. All these are tremendously attractive areas. Then, last but not least, the agricultural commodities. Weather is always going to be a hugely important factor here. And I think there are some question marks over weather here in the US, some hot, dry weather helping to push up some of the prices here quite recently. Did I mention that I bought soybeans in here today? Upside key day reversal yesterday, which Owen pointed out, and near the bottom of the range. But some of these have been quite depressed. I also think the shakeout in commodity prices, in rather the shakeout in industrial resources and precious metals, that has caused some of the more speculative traders to take another look, hedge funds to take a look at the agricultural commodities, many of which were depressed. So I think that's a factor, but there are also seasonal factors and weather factors that are causing some of these to perform. Now, if my script is wrong, what would most likely cause it to be wrong? Well, in terms of global growth, I think that will be punctuated by some periods of recession and stagflation from time to time. But overall, I'm on the more optimistic rather than pessimistic side in terms of global GDP growth due to globalization, due to the fact that all of these developing economies, for the most part, have embraced capitalism. Sometimes it's command capitalism or authoritarian capitalism, but nevertheless, when you unleash the capitalistic spirits within a society, it can certainly achieve considerable wonders in terms of rapid economic development. There is a trade-off there, and so if something goes really wrong, I think it would be a major environmental disaster. Hopefully, we can avoid that. And the other one is a pandemic. Hopefully, we can avoid that. I suspect over the longer term, the ecological disaster is the greater risk of the two, but it would have to be of biblical proportions to, I think, really seriously upset the script that I have outlined for you in this broadcast. And I think it's about time I brought this to an end and just say, have an absolutely splendid weekend. And I'll look forward to discussing what will no doubt be another interesting week next week. All the best.